Exodus chapter 16. And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, At even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord, for that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord, and what are we as you murmur against us? And Moses said, This shall be, when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. And Moses spake unto Aaron, Say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, Come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, At even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread, and ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp, and in the morning the dew lay round about the host. And when the dew that lay was gone up, behold, upon the face of the wilderness there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoarfrost, on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, It is manna, for they wist not what it was. And Moses said unto them, This is the bread which the Lord hath given you to eat. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man according to the number of your persons. Take ye every man for them which are in his tents. And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more, some less. And when they did meet it with an omer, he that gathered much had nothing over, and he that gathered little had no lack. They gathered every man according to his eating. And Moses said, Let no man leave of it till the morning. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses, but some of them left of it until the morning. And it bred worms and stank, and Moses was wroth with them. And they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating. And when the sun waxed hot, it melted. And it came to pass that on the sixth day they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man. And all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses. And he said unto them, This is that which the Lord hath said, To Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which you will bake today, and seed that you will seed, and that which remaineth over lay up for you to be kept until the morning. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither was there any worm therein. And Moses said, Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today ye shall not find it in the field. 6 days ye shall gather it, but on the seventh day, which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass that there went out some of the people on the seventh day for to gather, and they found none. And the Lord said unto Moses, How long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath, therefore he giveth you on the sixth day the bread of 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. And the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. And it was like coriander seed, white. And the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And Moses said, This is the thing which the Lord commanded. Fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness, when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. And Moses said unto Aaron, Take a pot, and put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years until they came to the land inhabited. They did eat manna until they came unto the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is a tenth part of an ephah. Father, we thank you for your word, and I just pray that you would take it with your Holy Spirit and apply it to our hearts and help our understanding that we might be better pleasing service to you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. We're at Exodus 16, and we've gone up through. We've had the 10 plagues in Egypt. God freed his people. He took them to the border of the Red Sea where the armies, Pharaoh's armies were coming to recapture them, but he opened a way in the sea and they walked through on dry land. He collapsed the waters, destroyed the armies of Pharaoh. Then they get to the other side, and in 3 days they're already complaining because they come to a water hole and they think they'll be fine, but it's bitter water. They can't drink it. And so they complain and murmur instead of saying, well, you know, if God just did these 10 magnificent plagues on Egypt, if we walk through the Red Sea on dry land, I think he'll be able to take care of us for a little water. But they started grumbling and complaining, but God knows he's training them, he's growing them, he's testing them, and he didn't punish them. He just said, showed Moses a tree, said, throw it in the water. Moses threw it in the water. The waters were good, and they could drink now. All their cattle could drink. Then they journeyed again to a very luscious place, a place that had 12 wells, 70 palm trees, and there they camped. So God is providing their needs. He's taking good care of them. So you'd think they'd be happy. Now, chapter 16, though, if they pick up from this from Elam, from the place of the 12 wells, they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin. So they're away from the oasis. They're back out in the desert, which is between Elam and Sinai. On the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. Okay, so we know they made it 3 days from crossing the Red Sea for their complaining for water. God provided for them. Now, this is the 15th day of the second month, which that means they've been out of Egypt for a month now, because the Passover is the 14th day of the first month. You have them change it, so that's the first month. The 14th day, they did the Passover that night. In the morning, they left. They left on the 15th. So now it's the 15th of the second month. So they've been gone a month now. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. That's about how long most of our faith lasts, isn't it? If it makes it that far, it makes a month. We've done pretty well. We have short-term memories when it comes to our personal comfort. So now, here they are. They're without food in the desert. And what are they doing? They're grumbling against Moses again. They're kind of afraid of just grumbling. God, Moses is the representative. They just grumble Moses. And the children of Israel said unto them, "Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and we did eat to the full, for ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Well, when we get to complaining, we kind of exaggerate, don't we? Do you really think they wish they'd died back in Egypt? If you'd ask them in Egypt, they'd have said no. They're just complaining. They said, "Oh, we'd have better off if God had just killed us with the plagues along with Pharaoh or and the Egyptians, or drowned us in the Red Sea. Like, it would have been better off, because now we're just coming out here to starve to death." Well, one, it's a great lack of faith. They've seen incredible miracles, haven't they, that God has done. They also have a very great lack of faith in the character of God. I think that's something we often forget, is God's character. Now, God didn't have to come rescue him from Egypt, did he? But they cried out, and he cared about his people, and he kept his promises, because he promised to take them out. So he does. He came, and he took them out with great signs and wonders. It's obvious that God is not powerless to do what he wants. He had all power. He did all things. He's brought them through. He's provided miraculously before. He sweetened the water and this, but they're like, "Oh, we'd have been better off. At least there we were full." Well, you know, that's kind of what we care about, is our bellies, isn't it? And in truth, even if they were to die of starvation here, most people like to live as long as possible, don't they? I mean, when something's bad, you stretch it out. You know, that's what always happens on the stories, the books, or the TV shows, or the movies, when the villain is about to, you know, kill the hero or the heroine. What do? You stall for time, right? Thinking something's going to happen. You try to go as long as you can. And, well, here they are. They should have said, "Okay, if God has brought us out here to start, then at least we have seen the mighty hand of God. We have seen the miracles. And I'm glad I lived long enough to see God do this great deliverance." I mean, I think it had been worth it to see the Red Sea parted, see God's hand like that, instead of just die as a slave back in Egypt. But mostly, like Jesus kept telling his disciples, "Oh, ye of little faith." They're in the boat, and they're afraid they're going to drown. And they're like, "Don't you care? They were all about to drown." He's like, "I've been telling you, I'm going to go to Jerusalem and be turned over and tried. I can't drown here. Where's your faith? I told you this is going to happen. It's going to happen. Oh, ye of little faith." Well, here, boy, they start doubting God's character and hurt. I mean, it seems like so many times when we look at situations, and of course you hear all kinds of things, you know, with politics, you hear different sides and just everything that goes on. We so many times, just somebody says something, we say, "Okay, that's it." But really, we should be judging by the character of the speaker. Okay, when something happens, and it looks bad for somebody, someone's accused of a scandal, because we know in the news all the time some scandal will pop up and then it'll be retracted because it wasn't valid or whatever. Why don't we always just look at the one thing we heard? Why don't we look at the character of the person? When they're in the past, if they've been honest over and over and over. I mean, if you told me, if I got the financial reports, because the financial reports come in from Wells Fargo, and I open them up, take a glance at them, before then I give them to TC, that way somebody else has seen it, and open it up, and if it suddenly came in, and half our money was gone, I'm not going to just immediately go, "That TC must have stolen our money." It's like, he's been a faithful treasurer for years. Why would his character change now? There must be some other explanation that we need to go see. Look at the character. Well, what character could be greater than the character of God? His character is unquestionable. He's always good. He's always right. He's done all these things. But as soon as they get hungry, here they go. They start complaining, and they complain to Moses, "We're just going to die out here. We'd have been better off." In the first place, what did Jesus say when he's being tempted in the wilderness? And he was hungry. He had been there for 40 days. And Satan came and said, "Turn these stones into bread." And Jesus answered from Deuteronomy, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceedeth out of the mouth of God." As Job said, He's desired your word more than my necessary food. You know, the first thing they should be thinking is, we want to hear from God. What does God have to say about this? If God says he wants us to die in the wilderness, then okay, we'll die in the wilderness. But what is God's will here? We want to hear from God. And instead, we just say, oh, we want bread. Forget God, we want bread. Then said the Lord unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you. Now, wait a minute. As soon as they got hungry, did they go to God? They said, God, we see a need here. What do you want to do about it? How do we surrender to your will in this? What do you want to do? They started saying, we're going to starve to death out here. And God said, I'm going to do something beyond your wildest imagination. He will give us more than we ever ask or think. He said, yeah, you're in the wilderness. It looks pretty bad. You've been out here without anything to eat. You've run out of food we brought out. Don't see anything out here in the wilderness. There's no grocery store. And that, what are you going to do? It looks pretty serious. He said, I am going to do above and beyond your expectations. I'm going to rain bread from heaven. Now, that's a pretty big deal. Bread doesn't fall out of heaven every day, does it? I've never seen it. But he said, that's what I'm going to do for you. I'm going to rain bread out of heaven. And the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. Of course, Jesus, in what we call the Lord's Prayer, what did his pray? Give us this day our daily bread. You know, that's really all we need, isn't it? Just enough for the day. And we think we've got to have it stacked up for the rest of the month, that we go to the grocery store, have enough in savings so we can support ourselves all through retirement, all this kind of thing. But in the end, all we really need is our daily bread. That's it. That's all we have to have. He made sure he used to provide that long-term savings. He made sure he provided it just in the nick of time, like he did with Robert Mueller. That's his provision. But God has a purpose in doing it this way. God didn't just drag him out here and say, well, you know, I hadn't got all my logistics in place yet, so you're going to have to wait a little while, but, you know, the supply trucks will start showing up. And it's not like that. He knew what he was doing the whole time. He knew they were going to be without bread. And he's, matter of fact, he's teaching them lessons because these are going to be his people, right? This is important. They've got a lot to learn. So first, he makes them wait till they're hungry. First, they have to realize their need. You know, we don't appreciate God's provision until we realize our need, do we? Of course, our greatest need is of salvation. But so few people today realize their need. You know, as Rob was going through the Sunday school lesson about Saul and how God knocked him off his donkey flat on his back, before he used him, before he said, go and come to me. Well, I'm afraid that's the part we keep missing. We don't get knocked flat on the back. And that's really where you've got to start. I mean, we give an invitation and we want people to walk down the aisle, but I don't want them walking down the aisle unless God has already knocked them flat on their back before. Because if we're going to keep doing what we're doing, Paul was doing what he thought was best for God in his own strength, wasn't he? And the first thing he had to do is say, Paul, you're 180 degrees out of phase. You're wrong. What you're doing is wrong. Then he said, all right, now come to me and I'll show you what's right. And he did. But I'm afraid in our society, people don't think they have any need of salvation. They don't think anything they're doing is wrong. If anybody even hints that what they're doing is wrong, you're in trouble. If you even, you know, you don't even have to be, well, I'll take the Boy Scouts example. Okay? The Boy Scouts never allowed openly homosexual leaders. Okay? Took a stand for it, even stood up in court. Then suddenly they come out and say, well, we're just going to change our policy that's up to the local groups. Do whatever you want. Immediately, they were slammed. They've got lawsuits against them to try to openly acknowledge same-sex marriage, to openly promote homosexual leaders. California is trying to pass a law that'll take away their tax-exempt status if any organization doesn't recognize the validity of homosexuality. You can't even disagree anymore without having all over you. So the first thing people have to realize is that they have a need of God. They were hungry. They knew they needed bread. We're lost and in horrible condition, but we haven't realized that we need a Savior. So it's just hard to give somebody good news when they don't know the bad news yet. So the first thing is God really has to knock us off our feet with our need of salvation. Then we're ready to get up and obey him and follow him in. So he's testing them by this delay to see that their provision is really from God, not from themselves. But he also says that I'm going to give them bread from heaven. I mean, what more could you want? But I'm doing it that I may test them. I may prove them to find out if they're going to follow my law and my commandments. Okay? Where's he taking them? We have the advantage of hindsight, right? We know he's taking them to Mount Sinai to receive the Ten Commandments and the law, don't we? But he's giving them a little bit of it now. He's giving them a little test of it. And that's what really hit me this time. I know there's lots of times we all know about the story about manna and all this kind of thing. But I hadn't really thought about how God used it as a test of obedience. So here I'm making this great provision for you. I mean, he's feeding a multitude of people with bread from heaven out in the middle of the wilderness. But he said, I'm going to do it in a certain way. And I'm going to see if they're willing to follow my rules. Because that's the way it goes. God provides, but he provides things his way. We want him to do it our way, don't we? And so he's teaching them a lesson here by the way he provides the manna. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. So God has some rules here. He says, I'm raining bread from heaven, but I'm going to give you a set measure. That's how much I want you to gather every day. And I don't want you gathering it on the Sabbath day. Because he hasn't given the rule of Ten Commandments yet about keep the Sabbath holy, but they know about the Sabbath because they know about creation week. Then in 6 days, God created the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day, he rested. And so he said, I'm going to do the same thing with this bread. So what I'm going to do, though, you're not going to go hungry on the seventh day. I'm going to give you double manna on day six. And then you can rest on day seven. Well, is that a terrible, onerous, burdensome rule? No. The Sabbath day was created for man, not man for the Sabbath. That's what Jesus told us. We need a Sabbath day. You know, many societies, they've changed that. Okay, communists, I believe it's North Korea, when you're in the gulags, and they have some pretty bad prison camps and gulags, you work every day, except for 2 days a year. They give you 2 days a year off. You know what that does to you? That wears you out. They put you in these gulags to kill you. I mean, that's the point, to work you to death. They don't give you a Sabbath day to rest. You don't have it. Well, God established that Sabbath day for man. We need that break. Because it's tempting to just keep marching right on through. It's easy. It's your secular job. Just keep working. Just work all through the weekend so you can get ahead and get more done. It's sure tempting when you get an old house that needs lots of work and you want to get some more things done on it. But actually, that's when we really realize the blessing of the Sabbath. Because sometimes we work late into Saturday night, but then it was Sunday. It's like, oh, good. Now I have to rest. I can't get up and do anything. I can rest. And it's such a refreshing day to have that break. But God is giving them obedience lessons. They're his children, and I'm afraid they're babes. And what do you do with your little kids? Well, you begin to train them to obedience, don't you? You work on it little by little. And that's what he's doing. And in a little while, the Ten Commandments, he's going to give them, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it. So it's his commandment. We should keep it. Now, there's some teachers that I respect, but I disagree with them. They say that all the Ten Commandments apply today except for the Sabbath day. Well, what tells you that that one's different? I don't see anything indicated in Scripture that contramands it. Okay? And it doesn't say you have to do like the old Jews, that you only take so many steps on a Sabbath day and all these silly rules. No, he said just cease from your labor. Have a day for you that you can rest. He provides enough food the day before, so it's all there. It was made for man. But he's given these rules to see if we're going to obey. That's what he did with the Jews. That's what he does with us. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, at even, then ye shall know that the Lord hath brought you out of the land of Egypt. It's a reminder that God brought you out of Egypt. He's the mighty one, and he can provide all your needs. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of the Lord. For that he heareth your murmurings against the Lord, and what are we that you murmur against us? Moses said, why are you complaining to me? I can't give you bread from heaven. I can't do it. It's God who's brought you out. It's God who's going to provide. So don't gripe at me about it. And Moses said, this shall be when the Lord shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full. So God is very gracious. He didn't say, all right, beginning tomorrow morning, y'all will have bread. He said, you're hungry now? He said, well, tonight, then eat fresh fowl. I'm going to provide for you tonight, and then in the morning begins manna for the next 40 years. You'll have provision every day. For the Lord heareth your murmurings, which ye murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Lord. It's a reminder, don't just gripe at me. When you're complaining, that God isn't provided. And that is never pleasing to the Lord when we're discontent with what he's provided for us. And he tells us, whatsoever state we're in, therefore be with content. He's talking about whether you're born into slave or free and this and that. And he said, if you get the opportunity, fine, buy your freedom. But God has put us where we are. So if we're complaining, saying, God, you just gave me lousy parents, you know. And if we're not thinking, we're saying it to God, if we say, you know, my parents just didn't treat me right. You know what you're doing? You're murmuring against the Lord. Because the Lord picked your parents. Okay? You didn't have much choice in it. If you were born into family, you had no choice. If you were adopted, you were probably too young to have any choice. That was the Lord's doing. Or if it's Lord, you didn't make me right. I'm not tall enough. I'm not good looking enough. I'm not this. Maybe I have some handicap. Whatever. God knows what he's doing. We don't need to be murmuring at God. So we need to take what he gives us. As far as our state in life, sure, there's lots of people that are a lot richer than I am. That's not where God put me, where he made me. It's not where I need to be. I don't need to envy. That's covetousness when I want what God has not provided. Be thankful for what he has provided. And if he has provided you in abundance, then be a good steward of it. Use it according to his will. If he's left us in need, then we can lean on, provide us our daily bread. He cares for us day by day. And Moses spake unto Aaron, say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Lord, for he hath heard your murmurings. So he calls them on the carpet. He says, okay, God, his heart, you may have been griping at me and at Aaron, but gather up. Everybody gather up. Come toward the cloud. God has heard your murmuring and your complaining, and he's going to speak. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. So there's been a cloud there by day that they can follow. I assume that it's the Shekinah glory of God began to shine through that cloud. It had a brightness, a shining. They recognized it was God's presence in the cloud. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, I don't know if he spoke to Moses and they repeated it or whether everybody could hear him. I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at even ye shall eat flesh, and in the morning ye shall be filled with bread. Then ye shall know that I am the Lord your God. Okay? This is no natural phenomenon. You're going to provide meat for millions of people here, boom, just in a few minutes, right here, this evening, and tomorrow morning they're going to wake up and have all the bread they want to eat. It's clearly a miracle. Some commentators have tried to explain various natural phenomena that might have happened, and I don't buy it. Even if it did, when it happens on command, it's a miracle. You know, if these birds, the quail or quail, and I think they were already around, whatever, but then when God takes millions of them and dumps them right in your camp when he says he's going to, that's a miracle. And this bread, I don't think there's any natural phenomenon that makes this bread. This is miraculous bread he does every morning for 40 years. And if it's natural, why doesn't it happen on the Sabbath? Okay? It's miraculous. Absolutely miraculous. And it came to pass that at even the quails came up and covered the camp. And in the morning, the dew lay round about the host. So here they are, they're hungry. And so that night, here they are, they've got their campfires, they're all camped out. And this whole flocks of quail, just unbelievable numbers of quail, flying and just settle on the camp. Well, if you know quail, they don't fly that well. They're a ground-dwelling bird. But they can fly. But some of them migrated over and flew, and then they just dropped in the camp. So here they are. They're everywhere. And I think here they are, they're alive, they're just wandering around the camp, they're hiding behind any bushes they can find, whatever quail do. And you just get out there, make your little net, do something, get out there and catch as many as you want. There they are. They're just right there for the taking. Don't even need a bird dog and a shotgun. You just get out there, there's just hordes of them. You get out there and I can picture the little kids out chasing the quail like that. Now, pheasant hunting one time, and there was one of the men, the first time I'd met him was out pheasant hunting on my uncle's farm and some area farms, and he was a former Texas Tech football player, big old lineman, but he just had knee surgery, so he couldn't get around. He had his knee in a brace, but he had a little boy, about Noah's size, and he was out there, so the guy was out here on his crutches, and he'd be going along, and then we'd flush a bird, and he'd drop his crutches, and shoot it, and it'd hit the ground, and so he'd send his little boy to go fetch it, and the old boy out there getting it. But one time he was offside, and this pheasant fell, and he fell off in the stubble over here on one side. And a lot of times you get them where they can't fly, but they can still run. And I was having so much fun watching that little boy chasing that pheasant up and down the rows of stubble. Because the pheasant's running along, you see his little head bobbing up above the stubble, and you see this little boy. He's running all this way, chases him down. Finally, he grabs him and comes back to the pickup where his dad was sitting. He's like, I got him, Dad. And it's there still wiggling and squawking. And he said, well, son, he's still alive. And he went, not anymore. But quail are the same way. They just kind of pop up and fly when you get them. So here, there they are. You just get there and catch them. I can see the kids picking them up, and the men out there throwing nets over them, whatever. Now suddenly, this hungry people are fed to the full with good meats and good quail meat. Then, he said, in the morning you'll have bread. Well, dew in the morning is not unusual, right? You wake up in the morning, there's a dew out there. A lot of mornings you have what you call the hoarfrost, which hoary just means white, and you look out there on a cold morning, and the deserts are very like that. Even in the warm weather, it gets really cold at night. So you wake up, and that air has condensed on the ground, and they've got little white, you know, all over the ground that melts away when the sun gets up. Well, they've got a dew in the morning. And when the dew that lay was gone, behold, upon the face of the wilderness, there lay a small round thing, as small as the hoarfrost on the ground. So now they see the dew and they get up, but then that dissipates quickly and they look, and there's still something out there. And they go out and look, and there's these little round things sitting all over the ground, just like the dew was, a little whitish round things just sitting there on the ground. And when the children of Israel saw it, they said one to another, it is manna, for they wist not what it was. Well, manna just means, what is it? They just look out there going, what is it? What is it? So they just called it, what is it? That's what it became. And Moses said unto them, they're saying, what is it? Moses said, this is the bread which the Lord has given you to eat. He said he would rain bread from heaven. Well, there it is. There's the bread. Go and eat it. This is the thing which the Lord hath commanded. Gather of it every man according to his eating, an omer for every man according to the number of persons. Take ye every man for them which are in his tents. So when you go out there and gather, so don't just gather randomly. There's plenty of it. Don't worry. It's not enough. There's lots of it out there. But I want you to gather an omer. Well, an omer is about a half a gallon. Okay, so if you think of a half gallon of milk, that's an omer. And that's what each person would have to eat for the day, and that's enough to satisfy. So go out there, so however many people in your family, go gather an omer for each one. And that's what they'd gather each day, an omer's worth. And the children of Israel did so, and gathered some more, some less. Some had big families, some had small families. And when they didn't need it, with an omer. So they went up and gathered it, and they measured it with an omer. Then they measure it. If you gathered much, had nothing over. If they gathered little, had no lack. They got their omers worth. That's how much they need. That's how much they'll eat. They gathered every man according to his eating. So God said, I'm going to provide this bread. He provided it in abundance. But he also regulated how you gather it. An omer each. That's how much you gather. Don't try to get a whole bunch more. Don't get less. Get an omer's worth. And Moses said, let no man leave of it till morning. This is your daily bread. Don't think, well, I'll gather extra and then I'll make sure because there might not be any tomorrow. Who knows what tomorrow will bring. Let's save back for tomorrow. He said, nope, don't leave it overnight. Get what you need today and eat it. Notwithstanding, they hearkened not unto Moses. No wonder he calls them a stiff-necked people. I mean, you just got through providing them meat the night before, and then you've got bread from heaven. They just walk out. All you got to do is go pick it up. You don't have to gather grain and winnow it and crush it and cook it. And here, just go get the manna. There it is. But they still didn't listen. They said, no, we're going to save it up. Might need it. You never know. Can't trust God. Again, he came through today. He might not come through tomorrow. But what happened to it? It bred worms and stank. And Moses was wroth with them. So they decided to save it back. Well, I'll save it back. You know, I can have it for breakfast in the morning. Either this will be more efficient. You know, I'll get 2 days at a time. That way I don't have to go out and bend over and get it every day. Or in case it's not there, I'll have it. But when they woke up in the morning, there were worms crawling in it. And it stunk. And you didn't want any part of it at all. I mean, you may be able to have a metal scrap place out here called Stinkies, but I don't know anybody's got Stinkies bread shop. You know, that just doesn't go over. And Moses is angry, not about the worms or the smell. He's angry because they disobeyed. And they gathered it every morning, every man according to his eating. And when the sun waxed hot, it melted. So God had a certain way to do it. He said, get up in the morning, get your omer, take it home. That'll last you all day long. And that's what they had for the rest of the day. Whatever was extra left in the fields, it melted like the dew and disappeared. So they didn't have, you didn't have rotting manna lying around out there. So that was one rule. So they learned the hard way to gather one day's worth and don't keep it over. There's another rule. Then it came to pass that on the sixth day, they gathered twice as much bread, two omers for one man, and all the rulers of the congregation came and told Moses, guess what? There was double out there. We had plenty. We were all able to get two omers each. So we got our two omers on the sixth day. And he said unto them, this is that which the Lord has said. Tomorrow is the rest of the holy Sabbath unto the Lord. Bake that which you will bake today, and seethe that which you will seethe. And that which remaineth over, lay up for you to be kept until the morning. So he said, whatever you want to bake, go ahead, cook it up. Get it ready to go. Eat what you want today. And everything that's left, you can eat it tomorrow. And they laid it up till the morning, as Moses bade, and it did not stink, neither were there any worms therein. Okay, so this is the beginning of leftovers. There you go. The next day, there it is. But only on the Sabbath day did it keep. Any other day, anything you had left would go bad. But for the Sabbath day, God provided double. Then you had it the next day. So God does care about his Sabbath. He mostly cares about us being obedient. That's what he cares about. I think that's why Chick-fil-A has been blessed. Drew Cathy started Chick-fil-A. And from the beginning, he dedicated to the Lord and he said, we are going to be closed on Sunday. And said, we're going to do that. Well, you remember when they started, they were mostly in malls, weren't they? The Chick-fil-A's in malls. They didn't have these freestanding stores like they did now. Well, they were in malls. Well, the way malls work is they charge you a percentage of your profits for rent, or a percentage of your sales for rent. So they, the mall, said, you be open 7 days, because we want rent on Sundays too. We don't want in a day off, and, you know, we're not making any money, so you have to be. But Chick-fil-A took a stand and said, no. If you won't allow us to be closed on Sunday, we're not going in your mall. And that was the only place they went. But they found out soon that there was no other store they could put in there that in 7 days could make what Chick-fil-A could make in six. God provided in 6 days what they needed for the seventh day. It's an important principle, and he blessed that. That's why, and I'm grateful, they now have freestanding stores, because I didn't want to, you know, I'm hungry for lunch. I don't want to go all the way out the mall, have to park and walk in just to get a Chick-fil-A sandwich. Well, now you can go to the drive-thru. And so it's out there. But the main reason they're in freestanding stores, there's no pressure from the landlord to say, you have to be open on Sundays. They said, we're not going to do it. But I just found it interesting that they made more money in six than anybody else would in seven. And I take that as the Lord's blessing on them. And Moses said, eat that today, for today is a Sabbath unto the Lord. Today you shall not find it in the field. So he said, you've got your double portion. Eat that today. You don't have to go out and gather. You can stay home and rest. You've already got your food. Because God isn't going to give you any on the Sabbath day. 6 days you shall gather it, but on the seventh day, that which is the Sabbath, in it there shall be none. And it came to pass, there went out some of the people on the seventh day to gather, and they found none. Again, lack of faith. God said there's not going to be any, but they were like, oh, I better get up there and get me some. I don't know whether they didn't get double yesterday or they were just greedy. I think they're just greedy. But guess what? It's not there. You can go look all you want. There was no manna on the ground. It was the Sabbath day. And the Lord said unto Moses, how long refuse ye to keep my commandments and my laws? Isn't it God is just tyrannical? I mean, he is a dictator, just a very benevolent one. But he doesn't just like to be capricious and set rules just to set rules. He has a purpose in these rules, doesn't he? He had a purpose in giving them one day's supply at a time. Because that's how you have to walk, one day at a time. God gives the grace for each day as it comes. We're not supposed to worry about tomorrow. So each day brings enough of its own. God's grace is sufficient for the day. He provides us our daily bread. We can only live in one day. You can't live in yesterday. You can't live in tomorrow. You can just live in today. So God is training his people. Trust me. It was there on one day. It'll be there the next. It'll be there the next. It'll be there the next. But then he has a special time when he comes to the Sabbath. He says, on the Sabbath, I'm not going to give you any, but don't worry about it. I give you double on the sixth day. So then on the seventh day, there was none. But that wasn't just God's arbitrariness. That was a blessing to man. They could rest and not have to spend all this effort out gathering. But mostly, God wanted to see if they were going to be obedient to him. Because he's about to take them to Mount Sinai and give them a whole bunch more rules that are all good for them. He's going to give them the Sabbath day and tell them to keep it holy. And they're going to agree to all this. But he wanted to give them some practice to see if they're going to obey. He's training them and testing them as he goes. See, for that the Lord hath given you the Sabbath. He gives it to us. It's a blessing. Therefore, he giveth you on the sixth day the bread for 2 days. Abide ye every man in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. Now, it doesn't mean they had to sit in a tent all day. You know, the pilgrims took some of these things pretty harshly. You know, they expected on the Sabbath day, you didn't do anything. You didn't go outside, you didn't do anything. Mostly you sat in church on hard wooden benches for hours and hours and hours, and their sermons were pretty boring, the ones I've read. And that's what you did. They kind of felt like suffering was good for you. Well, I don't think he meant that you couldn't go outside your tent. He said, don't go out in the fields looking for food. Don't go out there and do your work and your gathering. It's not out there. Don't bother. You get to stay home. You just got a day off. You don't have to have a 7-day work week. Here's your day off, and that gives you time and a reminder to remember your God, to remember the creator of the universe, how that he created everything in 6 days, and he rested on the seventh. He wasn't tired on the seventh, but he did that for our benefit, because we need a day set aside for our physical rest and our mental rest, but mostly spiritually. We need at least one day that's set apart that we spend our time thinking about God, reading his word, and setting apart for that. That's what that day is for. So it's a constant reminder to us. We need that. Otherwise, we just get off in our secular pursuits and forget all about anything that he has told us. He says, so the people rested on the seventh day. So instead, when we're doing it our way, we're like, no, I got to go and gather. I better, you know, I got to be diligent. I'm going to gather extra. I'm going to bring 2 homers home every day. And that doesn't do any good. Bring home more than you need. It all goes bad anyway. So just day at a time. Then on that seventh day, oh, I got to work that seventh day, I can get ahead. No. God gave it to you as a blessing for rest, for time for him. And so the people were blessed with this day of rest. Well, you know, they're tromping all over the desert for 40 years. I bet they appreciate that Sabbath day when they get to stay home and not walk and sit and spend some time with their family and use it to instruct their children in what God has done and tell them the stories of the miracles and crossing the Red Sea and all those sorts of things. Set apart time because it's too easy in our society that nobody's there all day. When do the children ever learn? We're off at work every day. It's wonderful to have a day off. We can be home and be together with our family. So I don't see anything to complain against God here. First place, he's given it to you. So if he wants to give you double on the sixth day and none on the seventh, then that's his business, right? I mean, if you want to come give me $100 every day and give me $200 on Saturday and nothing on Sunday, well, that's okay. I can deal with that. And what is there to complain about? He's dropping the bread from heaven all around you. And there it is. But he does it in his way because we need to learn obedience. And I don't know, it just really hit me this time that, you know, this is all on the way to the Ten Commandments. Okay? He's preparing them. He's giving them a little easy test of obedience. And that's what God does with us. And he gives us little easy tests before he gives us the hard test come later. It's there to build our faith, to build our experience, so that now as we obey him there, then he'll bring us closer. He takes his people that he's brought out of Abraham and out of Egypt. Now he's saying, okay, now here's my provision for you. And then he takes them to Mount Sinai and says, okay, I'm going to make a covenant with you, and you're going to be my people. And he guards them all through history. So that just, I don't know, that just really encouraged me. I really enjoyed that, to see how God is leading them along. And I can see how he does that with us, too. And the house of Israel called the name thereof manna. And it was like coriander seed, white. And the taste of it was like wafers made with honey. And now we live in a sweet, saturated society. It's hard to find much of anything that isn't sweetened anymore, is it? We're so used to it. Matter of fact, I saw that some dairy was appealing to the FDA to allow them to put aspartame in their skim milk. Okay, aspartame is an artificial sweetener. Okay, so they want to sweeten their milk, because a lot of people complain about skim milk because they think it's too watery or whatever. And I just say, go get Brahms milk, because they boil it down and it's good. I love Brahms skim milk. But they want to put sweetener in the milk. I mean, it's in everything. Corn syrup's in everything. Sugar's in everything. Well, that wasn't true in their day. In their day, you didn't have all these sweeteners. The only sweetener you had at all was honey. And honey was not in abundance, because if you wanted honey, you had to find a hive. And you had to fight the bees for it. So it was not, it was a treat. It was something special. So when God made this bread, it's a light, white, coriander seed is kind of an off-white thing. It's a white, tasty little wafer. And it tastes like bread mixed with honey. And how much better can you get? I mean, this is good stuff. Now they got complaining about it. They get tired of the same thing. But God has provided a wonderful, and apparently this had all the nutritional needs in it. Think how much time that would save. You just got to go pick it up, and there you go for the day. I mean, you could cook it however you want, just for variety, but there it is. You don't have to go hunt it. You don't have to raise it and slaughter it and whatever. There it is, these little white wafers that taste like they're made with honey. They have a sweet taste. And Moses said, this is the thing which the Lord commanded. Fill an omer of it to be kept for your generations, that they may see the bread wherewith I have fed you in the wilderness when I brought you forth from the land of Egypt. So the command was, save this, because this is going to be a testimony to future generations. Now, I'm sure at the time, you know, they eat this stuff for 40 years, and like, who cares? Everybody knows what manna is. But, you know, it ends at 40 years later. We don't. We never saw it. So he makes a jar of it, an omer, fills a jar. I assume he had just a clay jar then, but later they put it into a golden container. After they build the Ark of the Covenant, it's in a golden container, and it's in there with Moses' rod that budded, or Aaron's rod that budded, and it's in there with the tablets of stone that have the Ten Commandments on it, and there's a gold pot of manna. So it's pretty important, isn't it? God had them put it there in the Ark of the Covenant, as a testimony to future generations. So all those years they had the ark, there in it was not only the Ten Commandments, but this golden pot of manna. And so God preserved this one. He let it not rot ever. It lasted for years and years and years. But it was a reminder of God's provision for them in the wilderness. And Moses said unto Aaron, take a pot, put an omer full of manna therein, and lay it up before the Lord to be kept for your generations. As the Lord commanded Moses, so Aaron laid it up before the testimony to be kept. And the children of Israel did eat manna 40 years until they came to the land inhabited. When they get to the land of Canaan, God doesn't provide because now they're in the land of milk and honey. They did eat manna until they came under the borders of the land of Canaan. Now an omer is the tenth part of an ephah. Okay, so that now everybody's clear what an omer is. It's the tenth of an ephah, right? But an ephah is more like a bushel basket. Okay, so you harvest your wheat, it's a bushel basket. And an omer is your half-gallon container. It's about that. So it gives you an idea of what it was.